RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
And welcome to the Crush Sports Performance Show, special night and a very special episode. We are your weekly source for sports performance and athletic development information. I am Jeff Crushell. Craig Moonen is gallivanting the globe somewhere. The con man is behind the glass keeping us on track. And today we are talking about what it takes to be great. We are going to be joined by Jeff Golvin, who is a longtime editor and columnist for Fortune and also the author of a great publication, the book Talent is Overrated, and that will be the topic of tonight's show as we delve into the secrets and the mysteries of developing talent and try to get to the bottom of really what it takes to be great. If we look at what's happening out in the sports world today and beyond into business, music, and basically any endeavor you're involved in, one of the largest commodities in the world today is ability. And unfortunately, great ability is also one of the rarest commodities. So having an understanding of truly what it takes to be great is an important part of where we are today, regardless of what you're trying to do. The question is, what is the difference between top performers and the average Joe on the street? What is separating those people who achieve and those who don't? Well, you know, there are these ideas and these thoughts that there's this natural born innate talent that we're given to at birth, that we capitalize on. And then there's also the school of thought that says, well, hey, listen, you have to have a genetic predisposition, but you have to be in the right environment and you have to have the right influence along the way in order to harness and capitalize on that talent. Identifying opportunity is also very important, but there's been a lot of work done in the area of talent and what it takes to be great. And we are joined right now by Mr. Jeffrey Colvin. Mr. Colvin, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's my great pleasure.
Well, we've been looking forward to this conversation, of course. You're an award-winning author and broadcaster. You're a speaker in today's most significant trends in business. And when I read your article back in 2006 in Fortune, titled What It Takes to Be Great, I was enamored at the parallels between business and sport. Of course, my background being high-performance sport. I just wanted to ask you to kick this off, you know, as an editor of a business magazine, what led you down the path of investigating this mystery of what it takes to be great and where talent comes from?
Well, I'll tell you, we were doing an article on great performance in business. And actually, someone else proposed it to me. It was something I'd been thinking about for a long time, but hadn't written about this. When someone proposed it, I really jumped at the chance because I remembered something. I had a vague memory of hearing about some research that had been done in this area. And so I thought, okay, there's a lot here. This is something rich. Let's go. I had no idea what I was going to find once I got into this. It turned out that there has been 30 years of research on this topic, and most of it has not been well translated for a general audience. But it's incredibly interesting, incredibly significant, in my opinion. And that's what became the basis of the article. And then the response to the article was such that it was clear there was a good idea for a book here.
Well, and thank goodness you did it, because I'm telling you, the article in 2006 Fortune was like the teaser, the appetizer that got us all thinking, and we're going, what more could there possibly be? Looking back at your research, now that you've had time to sort of reflect in retrospect, I guess going into this, it must have been interesting to, I guess, sort of analyze the general impressions about talent and where it really comes from. The idea that it's naturally born, or the idea that it's developed over time under certain circumstances.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, what I found was that the vast majority of people, including myself before I got into the research, the vast majority of people really believe that the great performers do come into this world with a gift, a one in a million gift. You've either got it or you don't. And that's the primary thing that distinguishes the great performers from the mass of humanity. And that view is very deep succeeded. People hold on to that. They believe it deeply. And one of the surprises of doing all this research and then writing and speaking about it is that there, a lot of people initially don't like the findings of the research, which say that that one in a million gift isn't all that important. And in fact, a lot of the researchers would say that that one in a million gift doesn't exist. I didn't go that far in the book, but I got to tell you, there are researchers who think that's the case.
Well, you went to the point to say talent is overrated. And after reading your book, and of course, being involved in the sports world, we're always, you know, one of the first traits when we're trying to select and identify potential future players at the highest level of sport is this whole idea of talent. They say, and maybe we throw around the word talent a little too loosely, but we say, okay, they have to have talent in order to be recognized. And then they have to have these other attributes, whether it's character and aggressiveness and that competitiveness. They have to have an understanding of the game, game knowledge. I was very interested to see how you sort of tied the business world, the sports world, music, and chess. And I guess I came from all of the research coming together. But I guess the idea of talent is more or less a human thing, regardless of your endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right when you say talent is a word that we all throw around very loosely. We do. And so when I call this book Talent is Overrated, I mean talent in a very specific sense. And that's in the sense where we say somebody is a natural born golfer, or he's a born pilot, she's a born leader, he's a born surgeon. The idea of a very specific ability that is innate, you are born with it. Talent in that sense is what the researchers say is not very important and may not exist at all. It all comes from other stuff. Now, in sports, it has to be said right up front, there are certain physical attributes which absolutely can give somebody a big advantage. I mean, it's so obvious, it doesn't need saying, but it still should be said out loud. You know, if you're 5 feet tall, you're never going to be an NFL lineman. And if you're 7 feet tall, you're never going to be an Olympic gymnast, no matter how much practicing you may do. Right, so there are these, these boundaries on what you can do in sports because of physical traits.
Well said. We are joined by Mr. Jeffrey Colvin, longtime editor and columnist for Fortune Magazine and author of the great publication Talent is Overrated, which is our topic for today. Right off the bat in the book, you talk about something that to me was very counterintuitive. You mentioned how people sort of regard the research in sort of a an off-taste sort of manner. They don't really want to accept the fact that, hey, maybe right, I could have been great if I was in the right situation. But you also talk about something that I thought was very, very interesting, the experience trap. The fact that people with lots of experience were no better than those with little experience in certain situations. It seems counterintuitive, that's for sure. And I think, this maybe sort of sets the tone for understanding of where talent really comes from.
That's exactly right. You know, if you ask people what distinguishes great performers, if your kid asks you this, if your son or daughter asks, one of the things that you would very likely say is, well, the great performers work very hard. And it's true that the great performers do work very hard. The problem with that answer is that there are lots of people who work very hard who are not world-class great performers. And the research goes further than that. It says that there are plenty of people who work hard, who've been doing a job for decades, who do not get any better. And in fact, in some cases, they actually get worse with time. The ability of auditors to detect fraud, the ability of probate officers to detect whether somebody's going to go back to prison, the ability of surgeons to predict recovery time. A lot of these things actually decline with experience. And so It's got to be something more than just doing something for a long time. And, of course, the research says it is something more than that. You're quite right.
Right. Well, it's very interesting to think. I mean, maybe we could maybe try to pick it apart. I'm not sure if we really want to have time to do this, but I'm pretty interested in this whole concept because, you know, it could be maybe complacency in the workplace. It could be, right. you know, not keeping up to date with new technology. It could be just the humdrum of the grind once you sort of get into it. And the fact that, you know, new young people coming into any profession might have an edge on technology and new knowledge and new learnings.
That's exactly right. And that does seem to be a lot of the explanation. And it really gets then to the heart. But, you know, the question we've sort of talked around up till now without answering it is, okay, then what is the secret? You know, where does great performance really come from? And the answer is it comes from constantly pushing yourself to go just beyond what you are currently able to do. Constantly pushing yourself or being pushed to do something you can't quite do. And the people who've been in a job for years or decades without pushing themselves don't get any better. And they don't keep up with knowledge in an advancing field. And that's how they actually get worse. And so we begin to see now where the real explanation of great performance is.
Right. And, you know, you talk about it, you sort of get to it, you know, in the book when we talk about how you go about performing that work. There's a lot of people that work hard. But what the key, it seems, if we look at all the people who have succeeded, it's what you do with that hard work and what you learn with that hard work. Let me ask you this, Mr. Colvin, if we're, you know, sort of go along the line that hard work is definitely important, but doing the right work, this idea of deliberate practice is so crucial. How important is the environment you're in terms of maybe a business culture or a company culture, in our world, a sporting culture? This is something that I think is truly very important to understand.
Well, it certainly is very important. I mean, look, this is hard. Okay, I emphasize this all the time. When I talk about where great performance comes from, I'm not promising something for nothing.
Right.
Okay? I'm not giving anything away for free.
Right.
This is hard. And to push yourself like this for hours a day, every day, which is what the great performers in every field have in common. They all do that. It's hard. And so the environment you're in is critically important, because if the environment is hostile to this, hostile to something that's already very, very difficult, then the odds that anybody's going to do it fall to just about zero. But if the environment is right, you know, if it's encouraging, if it helps make it easier to do this kind of thing, then the odds go up dramatically. And so it's critical.
Right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, longtime editor and columnist at Fortune Magazine, author of the book Talent is Overrated. If we look at the concept of this, you know, hard work, deliberate work, work with purpose and building on it over periods of time, I think there's something to be said here for, you know, maybe the coaches of a team, parents of a family for that matter, and also maybe executives in a business. This can be applied across the board in pretty much everything you do at some degree or another. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the importance of those figures, whether you want to call them teachers, coaches, mentors, whatever, the importance of those figures is paramount. And here's the reason. Remember, I said you have to be pushed just beyond what you can currently do. Okay. Well, most people, especially in the early stages of their development, but sometimes also in the very advanced stages, most people are not qualified to figure out what the next step is for them. You know, what is the next thing that they can't quite do
right.
that they have to push themselves to? They need somebody to tell them. And the other thing is, if you don't get continual, good, honest feedback on how you're doing, then this is all worthless. It will never work. And so you need somebody to give you that feedback. And again, most of us, most people in most fields are not qualified to assess their own performance. And so everybody, darn near everybody, needs somebody in that role. Parent, teacher, coach, mentor. There is a reason that the world's greatest golfers still go to teachers. Okay? They need that other person to push them and give them feedback.
Right. Well, in your book, you mentioned that, you know, one of the largest and hottest commodities on the face of the planet today is ability. And we're talking about top performance and high caliber ability in any endeavor. And I believe that's certainly the case in the sporting world. You know, it's the it's the people that are willing to make that a commitment to achieve and get to that level that really reap the reward. And you also said something later in the book that was interesting to me, where, you know, everybody looks at all these people who are successful and are great, and they're considered lucky. The people who do the work, I think is what you said, the people who do the work are perceived as lucky, where, you know, not you know, that's a sort of a skewed view of of that scenario. The people who work the hardest, I guess, create opportunity for themselves.
That's exactly right. And what you find out is that those great performers, when they hear that other people consider them lucky, often kind of resent it, because they know that they didn't get where they are by luck. They know better than anybody how much work it was, and that it wasn't luck, except luck in the sense of having the right parents, the right coaches, and so forth, to push them along.
Absolutely.
But they know how hard it is.
Right. Well, and you know, I guess if we're going to apply the learnings here, we can look at some of the people who were successful. And one of the great analogies you have in your book is the idea in chapter four, titled A Better Idea. You looked at Jerry Rice, for example, one of the epic all-time great players in the NFL, and you sort of analyzed how he went about his business. How was somebody like Jerry Rice, who was a rough-and-tumble, high-performance player, able to extend his career, to stay in the game long enough to play that length of time to get those great numbers? And I thought it was very fascinating to see how he broke it down and how he approached the game and practicing the game in order to sort of, I guess, save himself, but also push himself to the next level without, you know, enduring the dangers of the sport.
Yep. He's a great example of everything we're talking about. And the reason I chose him, there are a few reasons. One, there's no argument about his greatness. In the position of a receiver in football, no one has come close to what he has achieved. So, first off, everyone can agree, greatest receiver in the history of football.
Without question.
Okay, so that's good. Next thing, when you look at his early career, meaning high school and even college, he was an excellent player. But nobody looked at him and said, this is the future world's greatest receiver. He wasn't drafted number one or number two or anything. I think he was number 15. He wasn't the fastest guy around. And in that position, speed is supposed to be paramount. So, you know, he was really good. But going into the NFL, he wasn't everybody's pick as the future greatest. But similarly, it's very clear what he did to become so great. He trained harder than anybody, essentially than anybody in the game, regardless of position. He trained 6 days a week, or sometimes 7 days a week, all year round, during the season, off season, whatever. He did a lot of his training on his own, and a part of the reason for that was that nobody else could keep up with him. He would train hours and hours a day in the most unbelievably punishing ways. And he chose his training for exactly what he needed in the position of receiver. So he did drills that would give him explosive power. You know, he would run, he would sprint up hills, stuff like that. Jumping, so he could out-jump the opponent. Strength, so that he could wrestle the ball away from a defender, no matter how big and strong the defender was. And his training regimen, again, there's no debate, was simply unmatched in the NFL. Now, wide receivers do not last 20 years in the NFL. It's an incredibly punishing position.
Exactly.
And no wide receiver ever has lasted 20 years in the NFL except for one, and that's him.
Jerry Rice.
And so he is the perfect example of all these principles we're talking about.
Yep, no question. And very interesting, I guess, last note on Jerry Rice is he spent very little time actually playing football. He did everything right. He needed to become a good football player, but he knew the dangers were in the game, so he stayed away from it. And, of course, that is intellect at its highest level.
Absolutely. I mean, I got out the calculator and just figured out how much time he spent practicing and preparing versus how much time he spent actually performing in the game. Now, it was extreme in his case. I can't remember the figure, but it was well under 5% of his total time was spent actually performing. And, you know, 95% was spent preparing. Now, the reason I made that point was think how different it is from the way we all are in business. We frequently don't spend any time preparing or practicing at all. We're expected to just go out there and perform all day, every day. And it so violates the principles of great performance that it's striking. And he's a great illustration.
Great. Mr. Colvin, we have to cut over for a break. Is it okay to have you hang on for a quick break here and come back? I want to talk about automatic. Is automatic a good thing? And knowledge is power, if you're okay hanging on over the break.
You bet.
All right, we'll be back with more Jeff Colvin and the concept that talent may be overrated right after this break.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com and join us Wednesday evenings at 7, Saturdays at 4. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Crush Sports Performance Show. Today's title, is talent overrated? We're joined by longtime editor and columnist for Fortune Magazine and author of the book, Talent is Overrated, Jeff Colvin. Mr. Colvin, again, thank you for coming on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Jeff. Love to talk about it.
Well, listen, this conversation I've been looking forward for quite some time, and the fascinating fact of talent and where it comes from and how it's developed, as you mentioned, has been studied for years and years when you delve into the archives of research. And one of the interesting findings that you note in your book, right around page 60, I believe, I've taken footnotes, as you notice, but yeah. is the amount of practice and how practice is done, and the analogy and the studies done on musicians, and in particularly the violinists. I thought this was a pretty fascinating insight into really what it takes to be great.
Yeah, it really was. And the study you're talking about is actually very famous. This is sort of the foundation of all the work that's been done in the field. And it's great, well, for a lot of reasons. It was pretty simple what they did, in a way. Hard work, but it was pretty simple. They went to a famous conservatory in Berlin. This is a school that takes people at the age of 18 or so. It's like college, basically. Turns them out at the age of 21 or 22. And it's a very elite school. These people go on, the best of them go on to careers in major orchestras around the world. So they looked at this school, at the violinists in the school, and they asked the professors, please categorize the violinists into three categories. Top category are the people who are going to go into great orchestras, Berlin Philharmonic, London Symphony Orchestra, stuff like that, or maybe even become international soloists. The middle category, second category, is people who are very good. You know, they could make a living in orchestras and so forth. They're just not the top group. And then the third group is people who are probably not going to make a living as performers, but they'll make a living as music teachers in high schools and stuff like that. Okay, so they categorized the violinists into those. Then the researchers studied these violinists in enormous detail. They had them keep diaries about how they spend every minute of the day for months and months. The researchers interviewed the parents and friends of these people to find out what they had been like as kids and so forth. They accumulated a huge amount of research. Now, here's what they found. What these violinists did when they got up in the morning every day seemed to be fairly similar. They spent a lot of time going to classes. They practiced in groups and stuff like that. And similarly, they had all started playing the violin at about the same age, 5 or 6. They were similar in all kinds of ways. The researchers could find only one significant difference that distinguished group A from B from C. And that was in the lifetime total of hours spent practicing alone. And the difference was very striking, and it survived every test of statistical significance. By the time they graduated from the school, the top group had accumulated about 10,000 hours of lifetime practice. The second group had accumulated about 7,500 hours, and the third group had accumulated about 5,000 hours of total lifetime practice. That's what distinguished the best from the middle, from the lower group. And, you know, in a way, it's so simple, but it took this exhaustive research to establish what a lot of people had previously thought. And then there's since been all kinds of follow-up research on all kinds of different people in different fields, which tend to substantiate the same finding.
Right. And it brings on a whole interesting perception of these people who are great. We don't see them putting in these thousands and thousands of hours of practice, the deliberate practice and the individual practice where these violinists really made their mark, the ones that really dedicated themselves to personal alone time, hammering away and mastering their skills. And then when they go out and step on the stage, of course, we all perceive it as, wow, these guys are gifted. They make it look so easy. It looks automatic. And you also refer to this whole concept of automatic, making it look automatic. Yet, if we look at truly what it takes to make it look automatic, the great performers in any endeavor have made a point, as you mentioned in the book, they've made a point of doing everything but letting it become automatic. They're always looking for a way to get better and push themselves.
That's exactly right. You know, you those of us who just observe these fabulous performers think that, oh my gosh, they could do it in their sleep. You know, it's automatic for them. But it's just as you say, the researchers found, no, actually, it's the opposite. They never let it become automatic, because when it becomes automatic, it stops getting better, right? You're not thinking about it anymore.
Right.
What they do is work very hard to make sure it never becomes automatic, that they are always focused intensely on what they're doing, very consciously, you know, doing every bit of it. And so it's just as you say, it's very deceptive when we see them. They make it look easy, and we're all tempted to think that, well, for them, it must be easy. No, it isn't easy.
Right.
Not even for them, you know? They did the thousands of hours of work that we never saw in order to be able to do it the way we see them doing.
Right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, editor for and columnist for Fortune magazine, author of the great publication, Talent is Overrated. Would it be safe to say then, over through these years of experience, the practice, the top performers get a true understanding of what it takes to be great? Maybe they get a feel for how to push themselves and what they need to do to get better. Maybe they have a better sense of what's going on around them and they know how to adapt. Would that be safe to say? Could this be one of the true keys that separate the great performers from the average mass of people out there?
I think the answer is that yes, it becomes that.
Right.
In other words, they attain that ability. They don't start out with it. And in fact, as you say, they become able to push themselves. But they don't start out that way. Virtually all of us have to be pushed by somebody else in the early years. And in sports, and music in particular, where people start out as kids. And in today's world, they have to start out as kids if they're going to become successful world-class performers. They have to be pushed by someone, typically, of course, their parents, to get a little better, to do these things that they can't quite do. And that raises actually one of the great questions, and it is a really great question, mm-hmm. That I get asked about all the time, which is, what should a parent do? You know, is it okay, is it right to push a kid to do something far beyond what he or she would ever think or, you know, try to do on their own? Is it right to make them do that when they're in no position, they're far too young to make a mature judgment about this of their own? Or is it a good thing to do? Because it's the only hope they ever have of becoming a world-class great performer. Well, and I got to tell you, there is no easy answer to that.
Well, and you know, in the book, I remember reading, you talk about Mozart, for example. You talk about the Olympic gymnast. You talk about Tiger Woods. You know, Mozart started young. And, you know, if we look at his developmental curve, he actually got to a high level of composing and music at a fairly young age. But he started really early.
This is the thing, you know.
Right.
People talk about what an incredible prodigy Mozart was. Well, yes, I guess so. But remember, his father was a very famous music teacher and composer, Leopold Mozart. And when little Wolfgang was born, his father, Leopold, stopped composing. That was the end of his composing career. He devoted himself to instructing Wolfgang. And, in fact, what we have then is a situation where this little boy was living with an expert teacher who devoted essentially all of his time to teaching and training this kid from the age of 3 in performing and composing music. Now, by the time Mozart wrote a work of music that is regarded today as a masterpiece, he was 21 years old. And people think, oh my gosh, it's a miracle that he could write such a great piece of music at age 21. But the scholars on Mozart say, well, hold on. At the age of 21, he had been receiving intensive instruction for 18 years.
Right.
It's not surprising at all that he was able to do it at that point.
You're right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, author of the book Talent is Overrated. Well, now, again, this brings us full circle back into what might be kind of a confusing conundrum here. Early on, we talked about people who are into a profession for extended periods of time also almost get worse at their endeavor. Yeah. Now we're going the other way and we're saying, okay, you need this experience over long periods of time in order to have a knowledge base to get better. So we're almost contradicting ourselves. We could see why everybody gets frustrated.
That's absolutely right, and you're very wise to point out this apparent contradiction. It's easily resolved, by the way.
Right.
The distinction is this. The ones who get better are the ones who keep pushing themselves no matter how far they go. They keep pushing themselves to get a little better than they already are. They are forcing themselves to do things they can't quite do. The ones who don't get better and who then actually decline and deteriorate are the ones who never do. They just crank out the work mindlessly every day, same as they always did it. They get lazy, they get distracted and stuff like that. And that's why they never get them.
Well, and very interesting. I guess this has a lot to do with a few minutes left here. I guess this has a lot to do with really, truly knowing where you want to go. And I guess maybe the whole concept of thinking big, there's nothing wrong with this idea of thinking big if you're willing to commit the time and effort. And I guess it has a lot to do with getting the right people around you. If you have all these magical things come together, greatness is truly up for grabs.
That's a great way to put it. It's up for grabs. It's available. It's not easy. That's key to point out. Okay?
Right. Oh, definitely.
We know how to get there, but it isn't easy. The thing to keep in mind is just what you said. It's available. And to me, that is the great message that comes out of all this research. It is incredibly liberating, because what it says is you don't need the one in a million gift that you either have or you don't. Great performance, you know, achieving these incredible heights is available. We know how it's done. It may not be easy, but we know how it's done, and virtually anybody can do it. So the path is open. And in fact, it's up to each of us to decide how far down that path we want to go.
Oh, very interesting. You know, I'm going to extend this segment here because I have to ask you one more question before we sort of wrap up. In that light, let's take business leaders. Let's take GMs of sports teams. Let's take coaches trying to put together a lineup and a culture inside of a locker room. How much of this information can be used by those business leaders, those, I guess, you know, culture leaders in terms of, you know, creating the culture and stimulating innovation and creating an environment of passion that's obviously so clearly needed in order to create greatness inside of a business culture, but also so individuals can strive for themselves individually?
Yeah, well, of course, all of it can be used by those people.
Right.
And the great opportunity here is particularly to use this in the world of business. In the world of sports, oh, this is all understood.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. Everything I'm talking about here has been well known, well accepted by everybody in the sports world for eons, forever. And what's amazing is that in the business world, it's like we forget it. We forget all this stuff that we know is true in sports. We pretend it doesn't even exist in business. And most companies, therefore, are not good at applying these principles. The few that are good tend to be great performers. And the opportunity for all the other companies is to start applying these principles, start thinking independently, creatively about how to apply them. We don't have time to talk about it now, but I do talk about it some in the book. They can be applied in all kinds of ways. And there is such opportunity for competitive advantage in the business world by applying these principles.
Huh, great stuff. Well, there's a lot to be learned in the book. By the way, the book is a Crush must read. This is a mandatory reading for all the athletes we work with, and it's on the top of our list for our radio show here for what that's worth. But we really appreciate your time tonight. I really enjoyed the insights. For everybody out there, the website is jeffcolvin.com. Other great books, Talent is Overrated, of course, The Upside of the Downturn, and a real cool take, I think, Angel Consumers, Demons Consumers, Angels versus Demons. I kind of like that whole take on the consumer side of things as well.
Yeah, that's a topic unto itself, I have to say. We can't get into that now, but that's a good one.
No, great stuff. And of course, the blog is on there and all your stuff. It's jeffcolvin.com. Yep. Mr. Colvin, listen, I've really been looking forward to this. I appreciate all your time tonight. And boy, you know what? I can't wait to get with you again to delve a little farther down the well of where talent comes from and how everybody can get out there and achieve it.
It's a great thing to talk about, and I'd love to talk about it more.
Great. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Mr. Jeff Colvin, of course, longtime editor and columnist for Fortune magazine, and, you know, I guess he's sort of got the label of an award-winning thinker. Next time we get him on, we're going to talk to him about what it takes to become an award-winning thinker, because I think that's pretty impressive. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up. We're going to, I guess, throw out a few more ideas that might just raise more questions. I'm not sure. But if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. The website is crushsp.com. You can email us there at info@crushsp.com. That's Crush with a K. We are on Facebook. It's Crush Sports Performance if you want to check us out. And we are on Twitter, KSP Network. We'll be back right after this quick break to wrap up. Is talent overrated?
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kreshel, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Crush Sports Performance Show. I am Jeff Kreshel. We're your weekly source for sports performance and athletic development information. Today, we had a very special guest, Jeff Colvin, of course, longtime editor and columnist for Fortune and author of the very interesting read, which is Talent is Overrated, as we kick off our 2012 season with our investigation into exactly what is talent and, hey, how can I get a piece of that pie? One of the things we talked about in terms of the great performers out there was how they went about their business and, again, how much time they committed to mastering their craft, never being complacent with an average performance or never getting stagnant in terms of what they're doing in order to perform. And in the 2006 article in the October Fortune, you guys can check this out online. There's a link on our website to this great article. But in the 2006, October 30th, Fortune magazine, there was an article published. This is the sort of the prelude to the book. Mr. Colvin wrote the article, What It Takes to Be Great. And he used a great analogy in there in terms of what the great performers do differently from the average mass of people out there. And he used golf as the example. And what he said, you know, simply hitting a bucket of balls is not deliberate practice. We would go out, grab our driver and hit 100 balls and just see how far we could whack it. The difference between that approach and what a professional golfer would do is the way they go about hitting every single ball. Number one, they have a very specific goal, hitting their 8-iron 300 times with a goal of leaving the ball within 20 feet of the pin 80% of the time. Continually observing results, continually making adjustments, and then doing it again the day after, and then the day after, and then the day after, and then applying it in competition, and then going out to get better, and then teaming up with people around you. Because no matter what anybody says, you cannot do it alone. I don't care if it's business, I don't care if it's sport, music, or even chess, the grandmasters of chess. We need people around us to give us constructive feedback and constructive input to help us achieve to get better. So a very interesting read there, but that is truly what it takes to get great. And the bottom line out of all the research that's been done over the years is greatness is up for grabs. Next week, we're going to expand on this a little bit more. We're going to look at the psyche. We're going to be talking sports psychology. We're going to look at the interesting phenomena of opportunity. Are there hidden opportunities out there that have allowed people to become great? And are you sitting on one of those opportunities without even knowing it? Are we creating opportunities for good and bad for our young athletes in our developmental sports system? I think you're going to be surprised that the answer is yes. That and much, much more next week on the Crush Sports Performance Show. Got to thank Jeff Colvin, all of our sponsors for the con man. I am Jeff Kreshel, and this has been the Crush Sports Performance Show.